Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, 710 ESPN is proud to salute all of our frontline workers as part of our Thank You Thursdays presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. We'd like to welcome in Damian Haynes, who works as an EMT in Buena Park and Irwindale. Damian, thank you, man. I appreciate you joining the show. How are you doing?
Thank you all for having me. I'm doing great.
Of course.
It was a really productive day, so I'm happy about that.
All right, good for you, man. So tell me a little bit about how long have you been in EMT?
So I've been an EMT, emergency medical technician, going on about 6 months now. I got started sometime back in December, and it's been a great career change. So I've been on about 6 months now, and this is for sure going to be the career path that I choose to move forward in.
Are you from L.A.? You born and raised out here?
Right outside of L.A., in the Monrovia area, but yes, sir.
Okay.
Born and raised.
What got you into what was it about being an EMT that kind of drew you towards there, or made you want to be a part of that that industry?
Mm-hmm. So I started out my working career as an educator. I was actually a teacher in Dallas, Texas, after going to college and at Howard University in Washington, D.C. And while I was teaching, I really enjoyed it. But I wanted to get more so into the healthcare field. So I started asking around to some of my friends and trying to figure out some of the different avenues that they had heard about. Started talking to my family and just asking them, you know, what kind of career path they could see me doing for the long run. And just after a lot of conversation with people and a lot of self-reflection, I decided that I wanted to go into emergency medicine. I thought that would be a good use of my talents, being able to be out there on the front lines and really work in the healthcare field. And from there, my ultimate goal is to become a firefighter. But being an emergency medical technician will allow me to really have like a front seat view of what really goes on in healthcare. And it's been able to, I know that it would be something that would be able to give me a lot of experience that I would need moving forward. So just after a lot of, like I said, reflection, talking to friends, talking to family, and just really thinking about, you know, what trajectory I wanted my life to take, I decided that this was the career path for me. So I decided to move back to California and chase this dream 100% and have been going at it ever since.
I love it, Damian. Good for you, man. Very admirable. And I love kind of the story and the background to it. So what's the process from you as being an EMT now to eventually becoming a firefighter? How does that process work?
So basically the process works in that in order to apply and in order to be hired with a fire department, it's mandatory, at least in California, that you are a licensed EMT. So it is a schooling process. So you do have to go to different school programs for it in order to become certified. You have to pass the national registry exam. And after you have your certification, then technically you can apply to a lot of departments. But most of those departments want you to have some field experience as an EMT, you know, prior to hiring you, because that is a large percentage of what the call volume is as a firefighter. Is going to be a high percentage of medical calls. So after you get your emergency medical license, technician license, you can apply to work for either what's called an interfacility transport company, or you can work for a company that has 911 contracts. So then, of course, that's another job process that you apply to. And once you get in, like for myself, I work for Care Ambulance, and we have 911 contracts with Los Angeles County Fire Department and a couple of other smaller jurisdictions. You have the opportunity to learn and to grow with them. So moving forward from there, it's a little bit of a separate process when you apply to become a firefighter. But you do have that experience on your resume and just kind of in the back of your mind to have been able to apply some of those skills prior to joining a fire department.
Damian Haynes, he's an EMT in Buena Park in Irwindale. He's part of our Thank You Thursdays. And obviously this is a frontline worker that's been doing a ton. So we appreciate his service. Can you tell me, Damian, how has your life changed since COVID-19? Maybe you could tell us just a little bit about what happened or kind of how your day-to-day is now and since we've been dealing with this virus?
Yes, sir. So the day-to-day has changed quite a bit, honestly. With my personal and my family life, we're all that much more grateful to still, you know, be healthy and have each other, especially with myself and with some of my other family members that worked on the front line, like my Uncle Talib. He also works for the city, so he's considered a frontline worker. It's given us a different appreciation, you know, seeing different people who have been affected by the virus itself or family members. We're just hugging each other a little bit tighter, and we're being even more precautious, making sure that we're following all of the guidelines that are put out there in terms of, you know, keeping your safe distance, keeping, you know, making sure that your own hygiene is up to par, and really just making sure that we're doing a good job of trying our best to keep, you know, keep that away from our family as much as we can. All of us have families that we go home to, but we choose to take this career path and to help people that, you know, are in need. So we are, for myself at least, I'm exposed pretty constantly to people who are affected or infected by the COVID virus. But like I said, just doing the best that I can to help those people out. You know, you can't help but to feel sorry for people when you see them in those positions and see them, you know, unable to care for themselves. So myself and all of the first responders, we do the best that we can, but we definitely have to be a little bit more cautious when we're coming home, you know, not tracking our shoes in or taking our clothes off before we come in the house, you know, jumping right in the shower, washing our hands constantly, trying our best not to catch the virus or spread it to anyone else as well. So it's been quite a bit of an adjustment. But like I said, we're just thankful that we're, you know, able to still help people out and do the best that we can to keep it away from our loved ones.
Damien, how much different is it? Just more just a question out of curiosity. How much different is today than, let's say, 2 months ago? Is it significantly different? And I'm just talking more upon how, you know, COVID-19, how it's spreading or the information that we have. Has your day-to-day changed over the last couple of months?
Yeah, definitely. I was working, I think on one of the first night that the hospital system started to change their policy and what they were doing in terms of how they wanted us to admit patients. So it's been a huge change, and it's been a huge learning experience. You know, the more that the medical professionals are learning about the virus and how it spreads and so on and so forth, we've had to take a lot more precautions. You know, at work, we are wearing the N95 masks on, you know, any time that we're outside of the ambulance. So that's something that's mandated by, you know, by our employers to try to keep us safe. But then also just kind of moving forward from there, you know, when we're out and about, whether we're, you know, with our families or, you know, working out or whatever the case may be, you just see a lot more people being a lot more cautious of, you know, kind of how they're conducting themselves. And for us, it's been, you know, pretty major adjustments. You know, we have a lot of small businesses around that are obviously affected by what's going on. But, you know, family members just being more cautious, not necessarily, you know, hugging each other as much as they may have before.
Sure.
You know, it's been a major adjustment, and it's definitely been a wake up call. You know, even when you think about like your professional life, if you go to shake someone's hand 2 months ago, whereas now, you know, when you meet someone new, it's kind of that
giving them the elbow.
Yeah, giving them the elbow.
Giving the elbow or bowing. Might as well bow.
My mom had a birthday recently, and it was kind of that awkward moment with family where, you know, do we hug? Do we just kind of say hi from a distance? So it's definitely been a major adjustment. Major adjustment.
Damien Haynes, who's an EMT in Buena Park in Irwindale, joined in the Sliwa Show. We're proud to salute all of our frontline workers. Part of our Thank You Thursdays, by the way. Damien, are you a big sports fan?
Yes, sir. I try to tune in as much as I can. My friends and family are all huge, you know, sports fans, so I'm pretty much inducted by just association.
What is the family? What's their favorite sport? What are you guys all rooting for?
Oh man, I feel like if I don't say this one, I'd be getting some evil looks.
It's okay,
people, but don't worry. The Cowboys for football.
Okay.
100%. They're diehard Cowboy fans. And then, you know, living out in L.A., Lakers all the way.
Of course. All right, look, you're one for two. That's okay. You're good to go. That's 50% on that one. Well, Damian, listen, man, I just want to tell you we greatly, greatly appreciate your service. We'd like to award you a $500 thank you gift to include $200 service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change, $100 gift card to Wingstop, wow, VSLiquor.com, and Shooteria.com. So I know that's that's nothing for what you're doing, but we greatly appreciate what you're doing. So thank you for doing this. Thank you what you do on a day-to-day basis. Good luck on becoming a firefighter. And hopefully, you know, obviously some better days coming soon. So thank you, buddy.
Definitely. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and thank you for the gifts. We all will appreciate that. Thank you.
Of course. Of course, man. All right. That's Damian Haynes, EMT in Buena Park and Irwindale. Our partners are making it happen, so we appreciate them. And of course, to highlight somebody like Damian, that's our honor to make that happen. So it's great to great we got a chance to connect with him. Okay, halftime, when we come back, Jesse and I got a number of topics that we want to get into. One of them, Jess, let me give you one of my teases for one of these topics. Were you much of a ping pong player back in the days?
Oh, are you kidding me? Those at the old radio station I used to work at, they randomly, I don't even know why they did this, but they randomly bought a ping pong table.
It's great.
Or as Christopher Walken would say, ping pong.
Okay.
And, you know, there were a couple times where there was a, let's just say they were hour-long shows.
Let me just ask you this question. Do you got a game on the ping pong table or not? All right. Let me just get right to it. Do you have, I mean, if I'm grabbing a paddle and you're grabbing a paddle, I'm asking is, are you going to give me a fight or no?
Define fight.
All right, we'll do it when we come back. Halftime coming up. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Got a duo tonight. Me and Jess holding it down. Jess, anything changed in LA Live? Anything different going on, or is it still as it was last time you were in there?
So the last, not including this week, because I was here on Monday too, but the last time I was here was about like a month ago-ish.
Yep, yep.
And I'm trying to remember. I don't remember if Starbucks was open the last time.
Starbucks was open. I remember you saying that. Okay. How about the hotel? Anything on the hotel?
I haven't seen a hotel. However, I do have a friend who works at the hotel, and he was telling me that they are kind of using it as a, you know, a shelter of some sorts for some people.
Mm. Okay.
So it is being put to some use. It's not just sitting idly there. But probably, you know,
being put to great use.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But, you know, for the most part, still, it's quiet. It's really weird. They actually have like a... I saw a movie poster on that big, you know, digital screen they have on the hotel for Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams movie. I think it's called Eurovision. Okay. I've never seen it before, but they're still passing advertisements for the cops, I'm guessing, and maybe whoever, for people like me who still work. I just find it weird that they're still kind of updating that with, you know.
Well, I think you said one time you mentioned that there was like a Clipper ad up for tickets or something like along those lines. Fox, so they got to update something.
Uh-huh, yeah. And the one thing that is different, though, is there are actually more gates. To get to like that little...
To get into LA Live?
Yeah, so to get into LA Live... Actually, no. Let me actually take a whole step back. So there's a gate blocking our parking lot. So in order for me to exit our parking lot, I have to move the barrier to walk out. And then I have to show a piece of paper saying that I'm allowed to be here to the guard. Right where I don't even know how would you call it, like the little alleyway.
Yep. Yeah.
Like an alleyway. You have to show a paper there saying you're allowed to be there. So you go through there, you go all the way down, and then right where the Starbucks is, there's another security guard with another barrier who opens the door for you. So it's barriers on barriers on barriers at LA Live right now.
Well, I remember, I think it was earlier in the week, might have just been yesterday or the day before, I was listening to Mason in Ireland, and I think Lindsay was saying something, John. They were talking about, you know, what media would go to Orlando, right? And they were just talking about the bubble. And one of the conversations was, well, when are we going to go back into the studio? And nobody really has a definitive answer. I will say, wouldn't it make sense if NBA gets going, that's probably the time we'll get back in there, you know, like right around that end of July, August time frame.
I mean,
but we'll see what happens.
That's what you're hoping for. And kind of speaking on when we're coming back, I don't know if you got your face mask from Disney yet, but I was talking to Funch today before he left because I'm today I got a weird package in the mail that was from Disney, and it's a Ziploc bag with the packet of fresh face masks and a thermometer.
Really?
Yeah.
So, that's great. No,
yeah,
I
took it as a sign of good news. Yeah, I took it as a sign of, oh, maybe they're expecting us to go back, you know, sooner rather than later. I mean, it's more than three months into this. When is sooner rather than later at this point? But, you know, I took it as a good sign as, you know, maybe they're just getting ready, they're getting prepped for it. And I got to tell you, the face mask is pretty good. It's pretty legit. I mean, my mom made all mine, but, you know, she's a professional, so hers are better.
She's a professional.
But,
she's a professional.
These aren't that bad. I'm using them because all the ones that she made me are dirty.
Okay, so let me get into this. Let me tell you why I want to talk ping pong. So we saw when the NBA issued out their, you know, all these health guidelines that the players got to abide by. Of course, we're, you know, well aware as best as we can. When they're in that Orlando bubble, NBA is going to do everything they can to keep it safe. One of those health guidelines was you can't play doubles in ping pong. First of all.
That's a shame.
Well, do you ever play doubles in ping pong? I don't think
I have,
but I don't think I ever have. Like,
it'd
I was trying to think here. That's not easy, but maybe I have back in the day. So it got me to this. So when I was growing up, I used to always go to a rec center near where I lived, right? And I used to play basketball there, football there. I spent a lot of time there. It was like the perfect place after middle school. You just go there and you spend hours there. Well, of course, they had a ping pong table. They had a pool table. They had foosball. It's the best, right? How great are those little community centers, those rec centers? So I used to play ping pong a ton. And then eventually I got a job there when I was 16 years old. So I basically worked there for about 4 years since I was 16, did some coaching and everything else. Bro, there was nothing better than playing ping pong. So my question was to you, how was your ping pong game? I was just curious how your ping pong game, because I used to spend countless hours as a 17-year-old and an 18-year-old running sixth graders. Like, all right, who wants in next? Who's got next? Get in there. Nothing better than ping pong. So you got some ping pong experience. You were telling me that at your – is it at the current spot you're at now where you do radio or no?
No, not there. It was at the old when I used to work for KFWB, formerly known as The Beast and News Talk 980, in like the back far kitchen room.
How long did that station last?
The Beast lasted.
That was a quick second, right? Like they were here, kind of waved, and then they were.
I want to say a year. It was probably right around
more
there than
I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. It went from news talk to sports to Bollywood to like this weird Spanish.
That's right.
Super
it went to
oldies.
Bollywood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember. I was still working there, and I was working the Clipper games. Our lead-in for Clipper games that year for like three games was Bollywood music. It was
that is awesome.
Interesting to say the least.
They had a ping pong table there.
Yeah, they had a ping pong table, and I remember a couple times when I was training some new people. During shows, like hour-long pre-recorded shows where you can just kind of leave it there. And, you know, if you need to go to the restroom, you want to go get something to eat from the kitchen or the vending machines or whatever, you got some time. So I was kind of showing the new person around saying, hey, this is where this was. This is where this is. If you want to get some coffee, there's a machine here. But there's also a machine. Anyways, we go to the back room and he sees the ping pong table. And I'm like, yeah, we got that like a couple months ago randomly.
Paddles are there.
Paddles are there. There's
balls.
A couple
balls.
Okay,
so the setup is – yep, you're all set.
We're all set.
How's the net? Is the net kind of – is it
– No, it's like a professional –
hanging a little bit or is it straight?
No, it's straight. It looks like they maybe, you know, found it like at a big five sale or something like that.
Okay, so they got a good table.
So I played a couple games, but I'm not very good.
All right, here's the funny thing. Years ago, we had our Christmas party, right? 710 ESPN. So this is probably – how long you been at the station now?
It's this year. I think it's going on 4 or 5 years. Right
okay,
around there.
Maybe you'll remember this. I don't know if you were there at the time, but it's right around that time frame. You remember when we had a Christmas party at the Standard?
The Standard. I don't –
So the Standard here in downtown, right? And it's known for a great rooftop bar, just a beautiful, beautiful hotel and bar. Well, one of the rooms that, you know, they rented out, the station rented out, they got ping pong tables. And they're kind of known for having ping pong tables there. So it just went from, I think they have two tables or something like that. It went from, you know, everybody got there, hey, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, all that, where people are just kind of casually, hey, you want to play a little game? And people are just kind of messing around. And then before you know it, like, this is a straight tournament going on. People going for each other's throats, talking crap the entire time.
I mean, ping pong is a sports station. What do you expect?
Ping pong is a perfect example of, like, hey, you just want to play a little bit? And then next thing you know, it's like, that hit the net. you're arguing on right around the holidays over a ping pong game. Oh. So I could see how NBA players – forget the doubles. How about just playing singles? I could see NBA players getting extremely competitive in Orlando with having a ping pong table there.
All right, so there's two things. One, I hope someone – whether it's one of the players, whether it's ESPN, somehow they have like a camera, a static camera sitting there. I hope there's videos coming out of this, because you know players are going to have some tournaments every now and then. You know, the multiple
they'll have fun
teams.
With it. They'll have fun with it. It'll be great. Listen, they got to follow all those guidelines. Like, you know, they're going to be very strict. And but this is all going to be part of something that's just new. It's going to be new for everybody. I'm sure these players are going to walk into this bubble like, what the hell? I gotta follow all these guidelines. Ping pong's gonna get some run.
So, and also, what I want to know is, did you pull out your headband bandana for ping pong at that Christmas party?
That's a great question. I didn't have it with me.
I can see you kind of like, yeah, we'll play a couple games, and you know, you're on a streak, and it's just like, you want to go, bro? Come on.
I was taking people out left and right. I'm not gonna lie. Just like I was taking out those sixth graders when I was in high school, just hustling them, making them go back to their homes, discouraged. No, that wasn't the case. That wasn't the case. What do you got there, bud?
All right. So, whoa, lost the story there. Florida, University of Florida. Mm-hmm. They are known as the Gators, the University of Florida. They used to have a cheer that was called Gator Bait. Well, it was announced today that they will be no longer using that Gator Bait cheer because of its historic racist imagery associated with the phrase. Now, good thing, all for, you know, eliminating, you know, anything racist, because there's just no need for that now.
Sure.
But, you know, it's an article written on ESPN, if you want to check it out, written by Andrea Adelson. But there's
probably one of those two, Jess, where I think a lot of people probably didn't know anything about it either.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure a lot of those who are Florida Gator fans, they got a great football program. They've had a great basketball program over the years. I'm sure, you know, 99.9% of them have no idea. You know what I mean? But keep going. Keep going with your story.
Yeah, I remember I was in high school in the midst of the team, Tim Tebow, Florida, and I loved watching them because it was always exciting. So one of the interesting things coming out of this article I found was it's going to be kind of rough. African American babies were used as alligator bait, according to the Jim Crow Museum of Racist Memorabilia at Ferris State University. So that's one of the reasons why they're kind of cutting it out. But not looking at the alligator bait part, I did not know that there was a museum of racist memorabilia. So if you click on it, it takes you, you know, you can find it out at the Ferris State University. They have a virtual tour. They have guided and like a 360 kind of view. And I think that's amazing. First of all, there's a museum where you can actually go back and see what was being put out as the everyday common thing that you look at it now. And it's just like, how can that ever possibly be?
Well, here's the thing. I'll say this. You know, life was supposed to be – everything's supposed to be about evolution, right? We learn more and more, and the more we learn, hopefully the smarter that we get. Now, granted, that's not always the case. And, you know, listen, I will say the one thing that I think could come out of this time that we're sitting in, hopefully just – people are less ignorant. People are more understanding. People have a bigger heart. You don't want circumstances to play out the way they've played out in order to reach that result. But that's – what else can you add? I mean, that's the only thing that you can kind of look at it from that perspective and say, hopefully when it's all said and done and the dust settles, good comes out. But I didn't know that. I mean, I had no idea about that as far as the Florida Gators, that chant that they do. I always – you know, every time I saw it, this is one of the things that makes me actually really enjoy college football. I've said this before. What's better sometimes than watching – a big-time SEC game, a great Pac-12 game that starts at 5 o'clock on night, at night. It's on ABC. I love watching college football, and it's the crowds that make it so exciting. You know how many times you've seen that Florida, that chomp, you know what I mean?
Oh, I love that. That was one of the reasons why I love cheering for them and watching them.
It's one of the things that, you know, I don't know any better. I just see the energy.
It's one of the things that kind of differentiate college football from the NFL. Because, yep.
What do people always say? Like, they'll describe the Oklahoma City Thunder fan base, and they'll say, it's like a college atmosphere, right? Like, you know how you hear, you know, you're saying it's different than some of the pro sports. College is as good as it gets when you see fans and you see some of their fan bases. But, that's a tough one to swallow, but it's good to know that, okay, that's what it means, because I didn't know that before.
Yeah, definitely. So, Alan, I asked you, have you been to, or let's make it kind of simpler, what's the strangest, unique, weirdest museum you've ever been to?
Strangest, weirdest museum I've ever been to.
I sent you a link of different, unique, weird museums here in LA in your email. Just because here in LA there is
I got it.
What is it?
I went to a museum when I was in Japan, right?
Ooh.
I was in Hiroshima.
I bet you it's a Hiroshima museum.
And it was
that was powerful.
One of the most, you know, moving 2 hours, 3 hours, however long I spent there, that, you know, honestly, one of the most moving experiences. Here you were in a country and in a specific city where an atomic bomb was dropped, and it was dropped by the United States of America.
And it wasn't dropped like all too long ago when you really look at history. It really wasn't all that long ago.
You know what's actually crazy? Something I learned there, and you learned a lot there. But and first of all, let me say the photos that were there, there's a reason why that museum, I don't know if that's even the right word. Yeah, I guess it is a museum. There's a reason why it's there. They wanted to make sure it's a really actual and unbelievably peaceful area. And the idea is, let us show you how cruel and how awful this was so that it never happens again. Mm-hmm. So just think about what you're seeing over those 3 hours, videos that you're seeing, photos of people that you're seeing, how the atomic bomb, how it affects the people. I mean, the clothing, that everything you could think of was in this museum for 3 hours. So I say that because, you know, when you ask from a museum perspective, that's the first thing that comes into mind. Because I don't think there'll probably be another place that I go to from a museum perspective that's going to be as powerful as that one was.
Yeah, I can't imagine anything else kind of having that impact, just because it's, you know, an atomic bomb being dropped on a city. I was watching something a couple of days ago.
It's the Hiroshima Peace Memorial, and that was the that whole area is called the Hiroshima Peace Memorial.
Jeff, I'm gonna put that on my to do list whenever I go to Japan.
Well, there's also a building there, the dome. I'm trying to think off the top. I think actually they call it the Atomic Bomb Dome.
Oh wow!
And I couldn't get my eyes off of it, man. Like it's sitting there. It was one of the only buildings that stayed up. I'll send you a photo of it so you see it. Right? It's one of the only buildings that stayed up, and I think at the time it was like a hotel or something along those lines. And they kept it there on purpose. This was on purpose from Japan because they wanted it to be something that we all learned from. So literally, there's this building there. 100%. That's it. A symbol. That's exactly what it was. So, man, I didn't know we were going that angle, but I might as well kind of explain it. Because that was, you know, listen, you're in kind of that climate and in that moment. Hiroshima was 5 hours away from Tokyo, but I wanted to go there because I figured that would be, you know, just a place that you wanted to see.
Experience alone, yeah, to just go and see, just because there's so much history there, and it's so much, really, you know, when you think about it, it's awful history, you know, that it's...
But important.
Yeah, it's definitely important.
Important. And that's some of the history that you're talking about. Think about the thing that you just mentioned. It's not good history at all. It's awful history, but we could pretend like it never happened, or we can learn from it. And I think that's definitely. Yeah, I think that's key there.
Yeah, I don't think I learned any. Well, I mean, I kind of didn't learn a lot of something. The weirdest museum I've ever been to. There's two. One is kind of on the nose for weird and iconic. I've been to Alcatraz, which was fun. I didn't see any.
Oh no, that's good. I didn't see any ghosts,
though, so I was really, really sad. But sure. I've been about 3 years ago. I went to the Museum of Death in Hollywood.
Where's that?
In Hollywood, right on Hollywood Boulevard. It's near where I think it's actually right next to Florentine Gardens, near where the new Amoeba is.
Okay.
And down the street from like the Palladium and the Fonda.
Okay, yeah. Yep, I know that area.
And it's, you can't take any pictures in there, but it's literally, I was there, me and my girlfriend were there for like 2 hours, and it was just, you know, serial killers, Charles Manson, you know, guillotine served head. There was like letters that, was it Ted Bundy had written, that Charles Manson had written, like letters from the Zodiac Killer. So you learned a lot. There was like an, what do you call it? A taxidermy? A full body in there that they did. And they showed video clips of like what they do to bodies, to taxidermy, to like how they do autopsy. It was super interesting. I want to go again just because it's been a couple years since I've been there.
All right, I got a creepy story. You want to hear this creepy story?
I love creepy stories.
Okay. All right. And that sounded creepy. That whole setup, the way you just said it,
creepy stories,
was incredibly creepy. Okay, so right, probably three houses away from my studio. There is a house. It was where one of the Charles Manson copycat murders was. Probably three houses from where I live. Maybe four houses,
that's
something
not
like
creepy
that.
Creepy at all?
You don't think that's creepy? Oh, I think that's creepy.
Oh, that you didn't clearly did not hear my sarcasticness in that then.
Oh no, no. I for a second there, I was like, I don't know what more what more you would describe it as, but
living on top of old funeral ground, like in Poltergeist, that's definitely
yes, that would be definitely be creepy. But I heard this, you know, when I, you know, originally moved in or whatever the case is, and I could, you know, I could Google the address, or I could put in the house address, or, you know, I don't even have to do that. I could put Charles Manson and copycat murder and put the street, and it has like the whole story. It says the entire story. So that I'm not going to get into any further, but yeah, that's when you mentioned Charles Manson, I just thought immediately of that. All right, we got to go to break.
We do have to go to break. We're a little bit over, but it's all good.
Do you have things that happened today? Do you have some of those or no?
Wait, what? Things that happened today? This day in history? Yeah, I do have some this day in history,
okay,
if you want to go into that.
I want to get into that a little bit when we come back. And then also got some good NBA stuff that I want to get into. Some really, really good sound on just on the NBA front and what this bubble is going to look like. Brian Windhorst talked about what would happen if players test positive and so forth. So I want to do that when we come back. Plus, Andrew Grief from the LA Times, what the Lakers and Clippers can expect during this during game day in this bubble. So we'll do all that coming up next. He'll come up at 8:30. You're listening to The Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Whether you're a fan of bourbon, scotch, tequila, rum, gin, whatever it is, VSLiquor.com has you covered. And here's the best part. Don't leave your home. VSLiquor.com is the most reliable alcohol delivery there is. Make sure to type in the code SPORTS when you check out, and you'll get 15% off your initial order. VSLiquor.com, proud partner of The Sliwa Show. Another great beat. Jess just killing it in the studio there. Coming in with some Jay-Z left and right. I love old school, by the way. Old school Jay-Z. I like a lot of the old hip-hop. Not too old. Like, you know, early 2000s, 90s. That's probably my favorite era of hip-hop.
Bring in some of the new stuff and mix it
up. Bring it in. Hey, educate me. And I'm sure there's listeners out there that want to hear some of the new stuff. So you do your thing back there. Okay, let me get Brian Windhorst. So he was on The Jump earlier today, and he thinks we'll see some players test positive, and this is just kind of part of the conversation that we're continuing on COVID-19. And I read something on Twitter just a second ago. Let's hear from Brian Windhorst first, and then I'll go to that.
I think everybody agrees with Dwight's position and Kyrie's position being something that is worth fighting for. I think as Perk describes this, a lot of players, though, don't think and agree with the way that they're fighting it, especially going outside the bounds of the union, which has shown a lot of ability to negotiate with the owners and create meaningful maneuvers and meaningful initiatives. Now, if their point is that they have leverage in this moment and that leverage needs to be maximized, I agree. I think absolutely. And some of the things that Avery Bradley described to Malika Andrews and Woj over the last few days about changing in hiring practices and donations specifically from NBA teams to causes and not players, I agree with all of that. I just think it was the way he went outside the bounds while acting as a vice president of the union that has rubbed people the wrong way. And look, we all know Kyrie. He has no problem rubbing people the wrong way. That's the way he rolls.
All right, that's Brian Windhorst right there. I set that one up the wrong way. Let me set this one up. This is Brian Windhorst on thinks he will see, we will see players test positive soon.
I think we're going to see a number, but I don't know if it's going to be because of the political situation. I think we're going to start seeing players test positive relatively soon here because the testing is already going on for some teams. And just like we're seeing college athletes, just like we're seeing MLS players with NFL players, guys are going to test positive. And the rates of infection are rising in Orlando. So there's a number of reasons why you could get skittish about not wanting to commit to this. Being in solidarity with Kyrie, Avery Bradley, and others is only one of those reasons.
All right, that's Brian Windhorst right there, and I think that was Kedrick Perkins breathing in the background. So I just want to make sure that
it
you guys are aware
was
of that.
Perkins breathing in the
I've
background.
Heard, by the way, it's so funny every time I play. So Perk's been doing a lot on the jump, and Perk is great. I mean, he's obviously very opinionated. He's very authentic. I like getting his takes, but every time
you
he's
know when it's
on,
him because you hear.
Every time he's on the set, I could just hear some breathing going in the
you can
background.
Hear it, it's like he's like, oh no, I'm not.
Well, no, it's one of those. It's one of those things. Remember, Jess, I used to tell you like early on, we just started our quarantine.
Oh yeah, you said that I always breathe in my mouth. I was breathing through the mic, and I'm like, you're
but
crazy.
You had no idea that's how you know sensitive the mic is. So you know you make your adjustments or whatever the case is. Everybody's in a different position. But okay, so Windhorst says that. Sports Illustrated, I don't think they were the first one to report it. One of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers assistant coaches has tested positive for COVID-19 and is asymptomatic, while two other coaches have been quarantined. So that's happening from a football front. I mentioned, you know, we talked about Texas earlier, the Longhorns. They had 13 players. Is that what we said? 13 players that tested positive. That was reported earlier today as well. So it's going to happen in the league. It's going to happen in the NBA. It's going to happen in other sports. The question is just going to be, what are they going to do about it? How are they going to, you know, obviously as best as they can, quarantine those that do get tested positive? So that's going to continue to be a question. It's going to continue to be a question for all of sports, for all of businesses that are out there, for, you know, regular Joe Schmo like myself that, you know, is still going to work or going doing other things. That's always going to be a question. But of course, for sports, we got to expect that it's going to happen. Okay, Jess, what happened today? Give me some anything historical that went on today.
So there is actually a good amount of stuff that went on today historically. Mm-hmm. Today, back in 1812, the War of 1812. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what that was about?
No, give it to me.
I don't know. I didn't prep that. I just have a list of different stuff.
Okay, War
I just
want to
see where you're going. Anyways,
yep,
moving on. In 1983, do you know the name Sally Ride?
Should I?
Well,
no,
you do now because she was the first American woman in space on this day in 1983. She rolled herself into space. Look at that.
Okay, all right. Give me one more, and I know we got to get to Andrew Grief.
All right, one more. Ha! So this weekend is Father's Day, but did you know on this day in 1910, the very first Father's Day was celebrated in Spokane, Washington?
All right, that's what happened today. Thank you so much, Jesse. I bow to you from my living room to your studio.
Have I been home, there would have been newsroom music and, you know, would have had that scenery.
Stuff in the background. We'd
all
heard
I have is
girlfriend.
A sheet of paper. Yeah, we'd have had the dog barking, fireworks
mm-hmm.
going off.
Mm-hmm.
But we're good. We're Gucci.
All right, Andrew Grief from the LA Times. He's coming up next. He's got a good article right now in the Times. what the Lakers and Clippers can expect during game day in this bubble. So we'll kind of have an idea of what the day-to-day will look like for these teams, especially, of course, L.A., Lakers and the Clippers. Okay, should I even put Clippers in that category? We'll put them in there. That's coming up next. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, I want to welcome in Andrew Grief from the L.A. Times, what the Lakers and Clippers can expect during game day in the bubble. Andrew, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me on again.
Of course. No, of course. Thank you for doing this. You know, I've spent so much time, and it's nice to have this week a little bit of more details. Okay, what's the Orlando bubble going to look like? And there's a lot of stuff to read, you know, obviously read through, and I know a lot of great reporters have gone out there and put together some good stories. So what attracted me to your article was hopefully we get to this point where it is game day, right? And the Lakers have a game, and they're going to be facing – let's just jump all the way to September and say Lakers and Clippers are in the Western Conference Finals. So your article goes into the details of – what a game day would look like, according to this, you know, obviously in this Orlando bubble. Can you walk us through what that would look like and the Lakers being the Clippers in seven games?
So the article was basically drawn off the documents that the NBA sent to its teams on Tuesday and the NBPA, the players union, sent to their clients, their members, I should say. So it's drawn, every detail in there is something that has been outlined by the league or the union. And there's so many fascinating details. I mean, the idea that you can play cards in the bubble, but once the game is done, you're supposed to throw that deck of cards away. Or if you go golfing, if you, after you touch the flag pin or a rake in the bunker, you need to use hand sanitizer. It's that level of detail in these documents. And so, what I try to do is just, again, take people through. From the time a player wakes up in the morning at one of their three hotels, you know, teams are going to be staying in different hotels depending on their seating.
And Lakers and Clippers at the same hotel,
at the
right?
Grandestino. Yep, same hotel, along with the Bucks and some other teams. They're going to be at the Grandestino Tower. And then all the games are about 15-minute drive south at the Wide World of Sports Complex. And, you know, there's lots of different things where life is going to be totally different compared to what they're used to. I mean, some things are the same. There's going to be shoot around. There's going to be warm-ups. There's going to be tip-off. There's going to be interviews. But everything's slightly tweaked, right? So, you know, breakfast in the morning. There's not going to be a buffet line because buffet lines are banned.
There's those days are over.
No communal serving objects, as the document puts it. You know, when they have warm-ups before a game, players are probably not going to have access to the game floor until about 2 hours before tip-off, at least in the early going, because there's going to be multiple games happening at these venues throughout the day.
That's right.
So, you know, a warm-up where Kawhi Leonard gets up shots against a player development coach, like he does, usually 2.5 hours before game time, that's going to happen probably on a practice court somewhere. So it's and I think I wanted to end it at the end of the day because there's another detail I think really tells you about the circumstances the league's going to be playing in, where players are going to finish the game, they'll do their interviews, mostly virtually, and then they're going to have to leave on a bus and shower at their hotel room because showers are not permitted inside the Wide World of Sports Complex. I mean, the NBA has tried to think of everything.
Andrew Grief from the LA Times joined in the Sliwa Show. We're talking about what a game day in the bubble would look like for the Lakers, the Clippers, obviously every other team that's part of this, 22 teams total going to Orlando. What other, Andrew, are there some other things that kind of stand out to you from, you know, going through all the details on a game day perspective that you think that a lot of players are just going to be scratching their head, man, we got to do this too, or man, this is so different from then what we're accustomed to on a day-to-day basis in the world of the NBA.
You know, there's going to be daily routines that are going to be become part of players' routines. Who I should say, players, you know, they live a pretty routine-oriented life anyway. So the idea that they're going to be in this highly structured environment is not a foreign concept. You know, guys have, especially on game days, they have a habit that they rely on religiously. But this is going to be to an even greater degree. And one of the things that kind of put it in relief for me was the idea that, you know, when you wake up, you're going to have a daily health monitoring where potentially you could wear a smart ring that could track your temperature, your heart rate, some other readings. players are going to have the option to wear such a smart ring, and it's not going to, only they will have access to it. It's not going to have, you know, access to a bunch of different people. But the idea that that could give them a reading of how their oxygen is in their blood or stuff like that, that's a really interesting idea. I'll be really curious to see how many players actually want to do that, frankly. The idea that, again, I think when people just understand that when players are in the playoffs, you're around your team a lot. Well, here, there's going to be several teams staying in one hotel. The odds of players running into their opponent that night in the lobby or walking around, that's obviously going to be higher than usual. So I'll be curious what that kind of breeds in terms of relationship building. And maybe I read about the idea that tampering could be rampant. What could players, getting together, talking, maybe scheming out, where they want to play together in the future. There's a really fascinating, open-ended conversation here about how this three-month period, if it goes off as planned, could really shape the next coming years of the NBA.
Do you think, Andrew, there's a lot of, this has been part of the conversation. Okay, we heard Dr. Fauci, I don't know if bless the plan is the right way to put it, but basically say, okay, you know what, this is creative. They're taking every precaution. This is not a, there's a lot of details, and I don't expect anything different from Adam Silver, a commissioner of the NBA, and just the way the NBA has been handling things from the beginning. But at the same time, do you think there's also an overwhelming amount of concern of, yeah, we can put all this stuff on paper and it might all look great and we could get Dr. Fauci to compliment it, but there's also a very great likelihood that we won't be able to finish this thing off.
Absolutely. And it even says it in the very back of the document where they acknowledge that, unlike in March when one single positive test by Rudy Gobert put the whole season on pause, that's not going to be the case in Orlando. One positive test will not shut down the league again. But at the same time, I think they realize that this has to be adaptable, and they have to be willing to be ready to shut down the season in case positive tests go out of control and they cannot trace it. There will be contact tracing in Orlando, but if they cannot discover the source and all of a sudden there's an outbreak, I think there's absolutely a reality that they're probably going to have to adjust on the fly or maybe even shut it down. So we should not just assume that this will go off without a hitch, and that the NBA Finals will be played well into the first weeks of October. There's a real chance that obviously something could disrupt that. And I think that for something that a lot of people are watching right now in relation to that is kind of the positive tests spiking in Florida as we speak. In Orange County, Florida, which is where Disney World sits,
that's right.
The positive rate as of this week was double what it was a week before. That was according to state data. Out of Florida. So that's concerning. You can build a protective bubble all you want, but it's never going to be a hermetically sealed area. You can't wall off everyone forever. So it remains to see how well this very detailed, very exhaustive plan can in fact be carried out.
Andrew Grief from the LA Times, what the Lakers and Clippers can expect during game day in the bubble. You could find that in the LA Times right now. I got a question as far as, and maybe this is way too early, but for two teams out here on the West Coast, Lakers and Clippers, and you have this bubble that's going to take place in Orlando, so obviously 3 hours ahead, how will that work actually? Have they said anything about how late tip-offs would be? Like, what's the latest tip-off they would have there? Would they have a 10 o'clock tip-off there to accommodate, or a 10:30 tip-off there to accommodate the West Coast?
As far as I could tell, the health and safety protocol was just that. It didn't really get into set times. As far as I know, I don't even think teams quite know yet what their schedule will be out there. But in the book where they lay out this set of basically a simulated game day, it's based off the assumption that there would be a 7 p.m. tip-off. I think that now I don't think that every game necessarily will be that way, but at least based on this kind of like – again, simulated schedule, it was based off what it would happen for a 7 o'clock tip-off. So that means like out there, players would be leaving for the game for the arena at the Wide World of Sports Complex around 4:30 in the afternoon, getting there around 4:45 or 5, depending on what time on what bus they leave on. So that's, I don't know how they would accommodate West Coast viewers, to be frank.
Yeah, it's interesting too. You know, just going through the article, I know you mentioned this is all part of the extensive plan that the NBA had sent out, but just doing things just to kind of show how different it is. So tip off time, you have in here in your article, licking your fingers for a better grip, as shooters, you know, are known to do. That's a no-no. Players looking over to the bench where teammates sitting in front row are not required to wear masks, though it's recommended that coaches do that in their row. Players and coaches in the second row must wear masks. I mean, I feel like, and this is not to say that the NBA, I've always kind of went with the same assertion, everything's written in pencil right now, and you're going to have to erase what you need to erase and rewrite it, because, you know, this is just going to be the circumstance that the NBA is in. But it sounds like they got to so many details trying to figure out a way to make this thing work properly.
And it's going to be hard for everyone to, I think, keep track of the details and exactly remember what is exactly the protocol here. You know, if I'm on the golf course, or if I'm, you know, at the barber where they're going to have, or the manicurist or the hair braider where they're going to have appointments. You know, I think there's no doubt in any points where people forget exactly what the rule is, but there's up to teams to identify people to basically ensure compliance. And, you know, there's also going to be the opportunity for anonymous violations to be reported by a tip line that the NBA is going to set up. So I do think that you are going to see people, at least early on, probably staying to the letter of the law, because you're just not quite sure who's watching. I mean, the NBA, this is something that my coworker Dan Wojcicki and I wrote about in our, we wrote about the 25 most fascinating takeaways from the documents the day prior to that story coming out. And one of them was that the NBA security will be, you know, making sure they know who is leaving the property. So if you know, the seventh man on one of the teams decides to leave, and players are permitted to leave, but there are consequences in terms of testing on your way home and quarantining, and potentially missed pay if you end up missing games because of that. You know, the NBA is going to know when you drive out of the gates. And again, these are all things that they're trying to do to ensure that they can kind of, they know where everyone is at all times.
Andrew, well, look, it's great stuff, and I appreciate your insight on this. And it offers, I think, for those out there, for listeners out there, just kind of gives you a look into what it's eventually going to look like, not just for the Lakers, not just for the Clippers, but for the other 20 teams that are going to participate in Orlando. So hopefully we get to that point. Hopefully we end up getting this regular season going, and then eventually playoffs, and then to crown a champion. But I appreciate you joining the show, and stay safe out there, and thanks for doing this. All right, bud?
Hey, thanks so much.
All right, that's Andrew Grief right there from the LA Times. Final thoughts coming up next. Stay right here. Appreciate you guys tuning in. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, appreciate you guys tuning in. Go till 9, as you hear Mario say right there. Okay, so a couple things I want to get into here. I want to read off this tweet from John Heyman. MLB owners are so upset by the players. MLB owners are so upset by the players' counterproposal, which is said for about $300 million more, that no response is expected to be immediate. He goes on to say time is obviously getting short, so hopefully it's not too long, of course. Okay, so let me stay with that for a quick second. You know, this, what were we talking? We were talking a little bit earlier about, we're talking about ping pong. Okay, how about the back and forth in ping pong, right? Baseball, this has been a perfect example. I've got a chance, John Heyman, who's insider at MLB Network, WFAN 660 in New York City. So he does a lot of work, and he's very well connected, and it's great to follow him. But what's funny to me is us just kind of going back and forth and seeing baseball find ways to not get a deal done. I mean, should I be surprised? Should we be surprised? Why would we expect anything different from baseball? We have the blueprint right here. I mean, the blueprint is, if you've been following them for the last couple of months, there's going to be a lot of bickering. There's going to be a lot of pointing fingers. You're going to get fans excited like Jesse and I were yesterday, and then nothing. Crickets from there. Nobody cares where you are with the negotiations, and that's kind of what's happened this entire time here. Tony Clark put out a statement today in his discussions with Rob in Arizona. We explored a potential pro rata framework, but I made clear – repeatedly in that meeting, and after that, there were a number of significant issues with what he proposed, in particular to the number of games. It is unequivocally false to suggest that any tentative agreement or other agreement was reached in that meeting. So why do I read that? I read it because why do we need to know that? Like, why do fans need to know that? Why do we need every update and detail about what's going on with baseball? I know we sort of want it. Don't get me wrong. It's great content for the show. But at the same time, people just want to see you get results. Then Rob Manfred comes out. I told him 70 games was simply impossible given the calendar of public health situation, and he went ahead and made that proposal anyway. Why didn't you guys figure that out when you guys were in Arizona? Like, why do I have to come on? Why do listeners have to take a listen to this? Why does everybody in the media need to tweet out, this is what Rob Manfred said? Well, now look at Tony Clark. Your negotiations don't have to be public. Every comment that you make doesn't need to be public. Everything that's gone on in baseball over the last couple of months, everything has been public. For what? Who does it help? Marley Rivera, if you guys didn't get a chance to hear her, she's a national baseball writer and a reporter for ESPN. She's fantastic, by the way. She was on the show earlier, so if you didn't get a chance to listen to it and you're listening right now, go back on the ESPN app when it's all said and done and go take a listen. She was great, and that was part of the conversation that we had. I'm trying to ask her, I'm like, Marley, how could this be a good thing? Like, what good comes out of it to be bitching and complaining to the media? You know what I mean? Like, through your channels of some of these great writers, these great reporters, but it doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help your negotiations. Actually, what it does, it makes it look more sloppy. It makes it look like that you have that there's no preparation, that there's a lack of communication, all that stuff. So listen, I'm not an expert in all this. All I could do is give my opinion. I do believe we're going to get baseball. I think that's going to happen. They're 10 games apart. Will they meet in the middle peacefully? And will we all be holding hands, singing Kumbaya? Probably not holding hands because we got to stay social distance. So we will not be holding hands. But will we be singing Kumbaya? Potentially. It will happen. But man, this drawing this thing out and going back and forth as long as they have, these have to be the worst negotiations we've ever seen, you know, at least that are in public, in the public eye. It's a bad negotiation. It's at a bad time, and people don't want excuses right now. I mentioned this earlier in the show. Life typically happens in two ways. Number one, you get results. You make things happen. You find a way to get over the hurdles. Number two, you make excuses. You draw things out. You talk about why you can't do it. I think it's pretty safe to say which one baseball is in. They're definitely number two. Buster Olney, who's ESPN's Major League Baseball insider, he talks about how there is a lot of anger right now. What a surprise. What a shock. Anger between both sides.
I don't think they'll lose the leverage of this moment, you know, because I do think because of how this has played out, the incrementalism of the owner's offers, the players being accessible to fans on social media. I think they have the support, generally speaking, of fans. But guys, if there's no baseball, in the end, you know, it would be the players going back out on the field in uniforms in front of the fans. And I think there is a lot of building anger toward both sides.
I don't think there's anger there. It's building. But I will say, if you just get the deal done, everyone will forget. They'll just be like, ah, is it what it is? Yeah, it took a couple weeks longer than it should have. Just get it done. By the way, the latest offer from the Players Association, I like it. When I say I like it, I like closer to 70 games. They're offering 70 games, you know, full prorated salary, which has been key for the players. And the season would go from July 19th to September 30th. Great. Will they get 70 games? Probably not. Will they eventually probably settle at 65? Yeah, that sounds more in line. Hey, Jess, what do you think of these expanded playoffs? You think a lot of people like that 16 teams will get in? And it's not just this year. It'll be this year and next year. You think a lot of fans like that?
You know, I don't know. I think it's going to depend on on like the fan base, because as a Dodger fan, I hear it. It's cool. Like as a fan, I like that. But as a Dodger fan, I'm like,
it increases your chances of not winning a World Series.
Yeah, and there's just there's a lot more potential because baseball. You know, I mean, the Dodgers have been a victim. If you get hot at the right time, it could carry you all the way. I mean, that's what happened to the Nationals last year. Sure. That's what happened to the Colorado Rockies, you know, a couple years ago. They got hot at the right time. So you don't want to go up against a team that's getting hot at the right time for the Dodgers, especially in a super condensed
season. Yep. Well, listen, when it gets done, I do think that there'll be a lot of fans that are like, okay, this is kind of cool. And there'll be a lot of cities that get excited across the country because now – you got 20 teams fighting for 16 spots. I say that hypothetically, right? Like each game is going to be more meaningful. If there's something that stands out sometimes in baseball, it's that the season's too long. It's drawn out too long. It's played over too many months. You know, the dog days of summer, all that stuff. You hear that. But I think this year, when it all gets worked out, it's going to be an exciting freaking season. You know what I mean? It's going to be an exciting season. So let me give everybody just a quick idea because tomorrow, we got a packed show. So let me give everybody a preview of what we got going on tomorrow. Clinton Yates will join the show from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. So a little one-hour action with myself and Clinton Yates. I know he's a big baseball fan, so he'll spend a lot of time, I'm sure, talking about it. Maybe there's a celebration tomorrow. Maybe baseball is happening. DeMarco Farr at 7:30. Obviously talk some football, talk about the Los Angeles Rams. And then Rich Hammond from The Athletic will join the show at 8:30 tomorrow. So we got a packed show before the weekend. Obviously excited about that. Real quick here, just a couple things and we'll get out of here. Don't forget tomorrow, Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ will get things started at 6 a.m. They'll go 6 to 10. Sedano after that, Will Cain following there, then Mason and Ireland. I'll join Mason and Ireland starting at 6 o'clock with Crosstalk and then Sliva Show from 6:30 to 9. Jesse, great job in the studio. LA, as always, appreciate you guys tuning in. Have a great rest of your night.